Hi everyone, this is Gifton, coming to you from the future. Just wanted to give you guys a heads up that we had a few problems with the recording and post-production of this week's episode, so the audio is not as clear as we would like it to be. We did our best with it, and we definitely think you'll still enjoy it. Also, just a quick warning that there was a heat wave in London at the time that we recorded this episode. So if it seems like things go a bit off the rails towards the end, it's because it was so hot and we could not deal with it. In Tom's words, it was hot as balls. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's special movie episode of Poorly Read.
Poorly Read.
All right. And we are recording.
Good. Let's all say something awesome. I'm gay.
Really, Gifton, that's awesome.
I'm so glad you felt brave enough to come out on the pod like this.
I just felt so emotionally supported. Because each of you has one of my testicles in your hand.
Yeah, we are recording this at knee height, Tom and I.
Oh, welcome to the second movie edition of Poorly Read. I just realised I just stole Tom's bit of introducing the font. Sorry, Tom.
Look, if you want to do the intro, mate, that's fine, but I really think we should have had a team meeting to discuss it.
Oh, this is so awkward.
No, sorry, Tom. You do what you do best.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Poorly Read. This is the second movie episode, the second very special episode with our very special guest.
Jared Leto. What does he say?
My name's Dan. I'll be translating for Jared.
Jared doesn't speak.
He'll be signing to me and I'll be speaking everything out loud that he said.
Yeah, there was a whole thing earlier.
Oh, okay. I missed that. I'm just as much in the dark about the Jared Leto jokes as everyone else is.
This is a really fucking rubbish introduction.
I know. Why did we think we could do a podcast, guys?
Okay, so this week we are going to be talking about the second Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Very much still a movie, not graduated to a film yet by Gifton's definitions.
Yes. I didn't realize how much it was a movie. And it's almost barely a movie. Yeah, I actually felt that watching this again, it had the production value of a TV movie for a lot of it.
Which is quite surprising considering it's a Chris Columbus film. I'm joking.
I'm literally looking at you like, what?
As we know from the first film, he's a little bit of a laughing stock in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he even still get work?
That is a good question.
This is the last thing I remember him doing, to be fair. I don't know what stuff he's done since.
No, they threw him out and said, you'll never work in this town again.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I feel like I noticed how sort of, in the worst way possible, how retro his directing style was in this movie. Even just literally like choices of shots, I was like, that you wouldn't do that. Or you shouldn't have been doing that at the time this film was made. We'd progress past that.
Yeah.
It seemed very much at the level of like Mrs. Doubtfire still to me. I was not impressed. So yeah, this movie was a bit of an ordeal.
It was, man. And it's so fucking long. Yeah. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Fuck me.
And you watched it at, what, 1.5 speed?
No, I literally watched it at double speed.
Double speed.
I tried to watch it faster, but then the words just become, like, unintelligible.
Yeah.
So two times the actual speed was the maximum I could get it at.
So just for reference, after this movie, Chris Columbus went on to do a few seemingly unknown movies. He did Christmas with the Cranks, if anyone watched that.
That is the worst Christmas film in the fucking world.
He didn't direct it, but he wrote and produced
it. That makes so much sense.
He did Rent, never saw that, 2005. I Love You, Beth Cooper, never even heard of it.
No, same.
Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief.
Oh, that's shit too.
That is... I feel like that is just a Harry Potter knockoff. It must have been like a competing studio who wanted their version of Harry Potter. Well, there's a book actually, wasn't
there?
It was a, but still, competing publisher maybe.
I think the story actually, I remember quite like kind of enjoying the first one, even though the film wasn't that good. I could tell the story was pretty good actually. And there's a scene in that, which is one of the most frightening scenes I've ever seen in like a non-18 film, where like a minotaur is chasing them across a field. Even just talking about it, I get like a bit like goosebumply. They're chasing them across this field while they're trying to get to like the gates of, it's not Olympus, but it's like the safe place, and it is fucking scary. So yeah, if you guys ever, you know, fancy getting your fright on, I guess.
I'll be sure to watch Percy Jackson
and the Olympians. And then stop it off, he did Pixels in 2015.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I've not seen, but I've heard is an absolute shocker.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of explains everything. I'm glad that his career went in a downwards trajectory. Not if it cost him his like family and his home, but like, you know, if he's all right still.
I hope that's exactly what happened.
I will say, I thought Daniel Radcliffe was all right in this. He wasn't great by any stretch, but he was totally all right, I thought.
In general, I found the child, I found myself thinking throughout, thank God there's a decent adult cast, because my God, the children in this film are just unbearable. Like, I could barely watch it. And I think that Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson are among the better two, but that's, it was not.
I mean,
not,
I still think Rupert Grint was a
really
best, yeah.
I disagree wholeheartedly.
That's so weird.
I could not stand him. It was just like the most over exaggerated facial expressions and talking like this.
Oh, but I thought he sold it to me.
No, it sounds, oh God,
see,
it's
guys,
awful.
You can have different opinions on things and still get along. Also, it means that anything you do in this life can be shit and great at the same time.
But yeah, you might notice we're going to go about this movie episode a bit different to how we went about the last one. Last time we were watching the film and doing a kind of talk along. This time we've all watched the film in our spare time because we're just fucking masochists.
Yeah, I found it very hard watching Malfoy in this film. Yeah. I thought he was truly terrible, actually.
Really?
In every scene he was in, it was...
Lucius or Draco?
Draco, of course.
Right,
yeah,
right,
fucking,
okay.
Like, Jason Isaacs is a fucking G.
Yeah, I thought he was great, actually, Lucius.
I love how committed all the actors were to their fucking role. Like, the
I know,
adult
they take it seriously, don't they? Even though it's obviously a fucking terrible film.
No matter what sort of level of stardom they are, they all fucking show up and do their best across all the films, and I think that's like really commendable. But yeah, I'm excited to watch their films in the future just because of how good all the adults are. Like, even like fucking Fiona Shaw as Aunt Petunia, so like,
excellent.
Her and Vernon are spot on the whole time.
Yeah, they're great. And do you know what I will say, what you said about Richard Harris as Dumbledore?
Yes,
watching this film I was like, he actually is great. Like,
it comes through more clearly in this one, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Like, he's proper Dumbledore to me now, I think. Because I hadn't watched, because I just associate these first two films with general crapness. Like,
they're shittery.
Yeah. Just general shittery. I haven't watched them since like I first watched them when I was a kid, because I just knew they were bad. And so I think I kind of associated him with that. And so to me, Michael Gambon is Dumbledore.
Mm.
But watching that second film now, like, yeah, he does a real good job as Dumbledore.
And even what I thought as well was that he's, because he gets quite preposterous dialogue as Dumbledore, but he totally sells it. And so he doesn't actually, you can tell it's a ridiculous line, but it doesn't sound ridiculous coming from him. And he adds a lot of the things that fuck you off about Dumbledore in the books. I feel like he manages to like negate that in his delivery of lines, that when Dumbledore in the book says it, it's just like, oh, fuck off, you prick.
Do you mean like that line where he's like, not who, Minerva, but how?
Yeah, do you know what? Actually, yeah. So in the books, it's like, you literally suck my dick, please, because I hate you so much. But I feel like Richard Harris says it in a kind of way where you're like, oh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. The line isn't the same. He just says that how they're being petrified, I cannot say.
Oh, maybe that's why. No, there's a bit towards the end when he confronts Lucius, or Lucius kind of inadvertently confronts him, and whatever Dumbledore says, it's quite sassy, but in a very, like, understated way. And there's a very slight, like, twinkle in his eye. And he does all of it in such, like, he sort of plays it like a beautiful symphony. He hits all, like, the right notes at the right time in the way he sort of does that scene. And Book Dumbledore doesn't do it that well. Which I guess is more down to the fact that Stephen Fry is the one doing it, I guess, since he's the one delivering the book lines in my ears. So as per usual, fuck Stephen Fry and all he stands for. So
yeah, Gifter's got a weird vendetta against Stephen Fry.
Yeah, I've got a V.
Now we're cooking. Right.
All right, let's move on to the start of the film.
Oh, wow, finally.
Yeah, so thoughts, feelings.
Thoughts, feelings. The first thing I noticed is the very clearly CGI shot of the rows of houses. They're in such neat uniform lines.
Yes.
That's true, yeah.
Like that,
I did think it looked odd, but I didn't think it was because of that. Yeah, I thought they were just real and weirdly...
Yeah, like weirdly sad. Aligned. It's like, that's not how streets are.
Not even in Surrey.
No.
No.
It's like a perfect uniform grid of houses.
Yeah,
that's very true.
It's so strange.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you just get an aerial shot of a like few cul-de-sacs?
Or just like take the opening sequence of EastEnders.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one would know the difference.
Right, so one thing I do think is that, I don't know how you guys feel, but Dobby's like super cute to me. Like, I wanted just to give him a cuddle and, like, give him, like, a pet name.
I don't find... I'm not even close to that.
Really? You find him repulsive?
I just find him annoying.
Oh, damn.
Like, I could watch him beat himself in the face with a shoe all day long.
Also, the big I noticed, when he gets out the stack of envelopes that he's kept from Harry, does he pull them out from?
I thought that fucking like cassock he's wearing is not big enough to house a fucking wad of envelopes that large.
He's been...
And neither is his rectum. No. So where the fuck is he pulling them from?
It's more of a smock, but okay.
He's been like flinging himself around that room constantly and that stack of envelopes hasn't fallen out. And then he just pulls them out from behind his back.
If I was Harry, I would have fucking put down whatever I was holding and given him a round of applause. Be like, mate, I've never fucking seen someone do that. You should have your own variety. Yeah, I was amazed by that.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like you should say that you found Dobby cute and you wanted to cuddle him. My next note after that was, I think I hate Dobby.
Oh, God, that hurts my feelings so much.
Yeah.
I love him. He's so inoffensive, and even his, like, douchery, I'm charmed by.
I just think we don't like him because he's weak.
Yeah.
I think the opposite. I think he's perhaps even stronger than Harry.
Well, he's resilient. He's got to be.
Yeah, I mean, resilience and strength, I think.
I mean, he's done Lucius Malfoy's housework for a lot
of
years.
He's literally been treated like he's been a slave.
I found the beginning to be like quite rushed. Like, in fact, the whole film, even though it somehow feels painfully slow and long, yet super rushed at the same time, feels like a sequence of scenes. Like, we have this scene.
Like any movie.
Yeah, but it's almost like a sequence of disconnected scenes that have been spliced together. And with a sort of trying to sort of thread a plot through it, and it's like I found the transition between scenes to be really really noticeable. It's like, now we're gonna have the dueling club scene.
I'm gonna put this massive rubber dick on my head right now and say, like, it doesn't speak the cinematic language, like films.
Oh.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Oh,
though.
Tell me more.
It's exactly.
Like, does he have a car?
Did you get very far? What Tom's saying about this is that it's like you can watch films and you can clearly put the narrative together just by the order and sequence in which the pictures are put in front of you. But this doesn't really tell you at all where it's going with it. And it's very rushed. And it's like...
Yeah, I feel like they're like, okay, so in this scene, they discover this piece of the puzzle. And in this scene, they discover this piece of the puzzle. And then they just put them together. But when I say it like that, it sounds like it should work. It sounds like, yes, that's what a film is.
Yeah.
I think the reason I didn't pick up on this was because of the speed I watched it at.
Maybe.
I think it's sort of everything obviously ran into each other a lot faster. So the disconnects I wouldn't have noticed so much, I don't think. But I think I do kind of agree regardless, just because of...
there's peer pressure.
Yeah, I agree, and I will smoke all these cigarettes. Okay. No, because I sort of, what I noticed was the weird way in which almost everything, including the dialogue, was presented. So now I've had this whole bit of how everyone, all the adult actors are really good, but I'd completely forgotten actually about the early scenes with Molly and Arthur Weasley. And what I noticed about that is that everything just seems to be an excuse just to get to the next scene. It's not an actual scene. It's every scene in the beginning seems to be just a pre-scene for the one after it.
Yeah,
do you know, that's, do you know what I mean? really, yeah.
Because like, there's a bit where Molly Weasley's like, and I literally was like, well, where the fuck do you go every other year? Like, she's like, they get the book lists. And then she's like, well, there's only one place we're going to get all this. Diagon Alley.
Yeah,
and I was like, why are you fucking telling them for? You don't do this every year.
Yeah.
Every fucking year.
Yeah. Everyone knows where you get your stuff from.
Even Harry's fucking been there. Yeah. Well, who are you telling this for? She might as well just looked at the camera and went, Diagon Alley. Wink. And it's like, that's
right. Looked at the camera and go, the next scene's going to be at Diagon Alley. See you there, folks.
Yeah, there's only one place where we can film all this. Diagon Alley. She winks and just like rubs her tit on this camera screen. And Chris is like, cut, Marley.
You keep that in the final film or I'm walking.
Yes. I'm lactating, so they're looking as good as they ever have. Yes, but it's smearing the camera. Good. I like soft focus.
Puts his hand on Daniel Radcliffe's shoulder, turns him around, he's just got a milk moustache.
Oh, yes, you love your bubbly milk. And that's his Got Milk campaign. Fucking hell, Radcliffe. Wow.
Did you notice the line where Ginny runs down and asking about where her jumper is? And she says, it was on the cat.
Oh, what? No.
What? Yeah.
It was on the cat.
Yeah.
Any explanation
given? It was on the cat. Nope. No other mention of a cat either.
That's weird.
Yeah, she asked Molly where her jumper is and have you seen my jumper? She said, yes, dear, it was on the cat.
They haven't even got a cat.
No.
It was on the cat.
Yeah, what the fuck? Why would it be on the cat?
Why would your jumper be on the cat?
What's the point of a rubber duck?
That was great.
I love that.
That really made me laugh, actually. The way he asks it. It was like, now, Harry, tell me, what exactly is the function of a rubber duck?
Oh, God.
That was a good line, though, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
I did like that. Then does he say rubber duck in the book?
No, I think that's just a film line, just to give it a bit.
So because he tries to talk to him about plugs, didn't he, at some point? Is that in that book? Is that later?
I think it is in this book. He talks to him about like telephones and stuff. But there's actually a break. They get sent off to bed and Molly and Arthur are arguing. And then the next morning at breakfast, but it's all rolled into one scene in the film.
So the Diagonelli scene.
Oh my God. I can't even with that. So like in the book, I mean, we go over this in the episode, but in the book, he steps into a fire and his mouth gets filled with ash and stuff and he coughs. So he stumbles over the words Diagon Alley and gets sent to Nocturne Alley by accident. In this, he steps into an empty fireplace and they say, speak nice and clearly. And he just goes, Diagon Alley. What?
Yeah. There's no good reason that you would say that other than you'd misheard that word every time you'd been there.
Yeah, but he knows where he said the words Diagon Alley before. I'm sure he has.
Unless Hagrid pronounces it that way, like Diagon Alley. And then Harry's like not heard it been said out loud since. So he's like, that's what Hagrid calls it.
That's a far stretch. I mean, he must have just been nervous to use flu powder and, you know, got all anxious and stumbled over his words, maybe.
I mean, or Daniel Radcliffe just said it wrong and they were like, guys, we can't say anything.
Shit, we've got to do a whole scene in a different shop now because you can't go to the right place. He said it too wrong.
Yes, they're like Julie Walters, right? Just fucking say it. Just make a thing of it after he's off set and we'll just splice it in and it'll be fine, right?
They full named her as well.
And she's like, fine, but we're keeping the tit shot. He's like, fine. Anyway, so they get to Nocturne Alley. Fucking Harry ends up in Borgin and Burke's. They might as well have just cut that scene for how useless it is because it doesn't... In the book, it really serves a purpose because the Malfoys go in there because they want to flog some of their dark artifacts. In this, we don't see that. So Harry just goes into the dark art shop and then touches things and then leaves. And I thought, you might as well have just not had that in there.
Yeah. Doesn't add anything to the plot. And then he wanders outside, runs into Hagrid like he does in the book. And then
really
he takes
fucking
him.
Weird people that I think they would not descend upon him en masse like that.
It reminded me very much of my walk from Brixton Station to my flat.
Oh, God. If you don't know, then you just don't know. But yeah, so Hagrid comes to save the day, and Harry's like, Hagrid. And then he runs up to him. And Hagrid's like, what are you doing down there, mate? And then Harry's like, I just got lost.
And then Hermione pokes her head in.
Yes. Hermione emerges from Hagrid's coat. He's like, Harry! He's like, fucking Hermione.
Hagrid's like standing on her shoulders underneath the trench coat. They're like trying to buy alcohol. They're like, oh, I think we've done this the wrong way round, Hermione.
Anyway, so they...
So he catches up with the Weasleys in a bookshop,
yeah,
who don't seem to have given a shit that he was missing. Molly just goes and goes, there you are, dear. Thank goodness you only went one grade too far. And then they just sort of carry on with... Like, they didn't look for him. They were just like, oh, Harry didn't arrive.
Yeah.
Let's carry on going about our business and we'll just assume he'll turn up.
But it makes sense because I think, like, they're pretty...
Ginger, yes.
Yes. No souls, nothing. Yeah.
No,
they
no souls.
They're pretty wishy-washy people. And Harry is very used to being forgotten about.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that no one really makes a big deal.
They're such a big family, so I bet.
Yeah, exactly.
George got lost all the time.
Like Home Alone syndrome.
Yeah.
They do a quick count of everyone and count someone random by accident and just go, yeah, we're all here, let's go.
Oh, God. So, they go into Flourish and Blotts to get the books. And what's his name is there? What's his name?
Lucius. Gilderoy Lockhart.
That's it, yeah. Good old Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh, who is a diamond in this film.
He is, but one, he's not handsome enough. Kind of full stop. But no, he's not handsome enough for what he's supposed to be in the book. Because he's meant to be, like, kind of very, like, model levels of good lookingness.
Yeah.
It sort of adds to the whole why everyone's like, about him. Whereas in the film, he's really not. Which isn't too much of a problem because they don't play up the fact that all the women love him kind of thing.
Not hugely. Yeah. There's some swooning in the bookshop, but that's about it.
There's a bit where two of the students do as well. And I remember thinking that's out of place now.
Yeah, when he walks. When he walks into the class for the first time.
I think it's in the Julian Club scene, isn't it? Because he throws his cloak and they're like, my God. And it's like, no fucking teenage girl is getting like that over Kenneth fucking Branagh, all right?
I know he's a famous celebrity and everything, but he's one of their teachers at that point.
Yeah.
Like, then they're going to be, you know, desensitized to it.
Oh.
Yeah, so I will say as well, I think that Ginny in this film is the only time she appears in the film and I don't want to kill her.
Oh, really? I think I hate Ginny as well.
Oh, God. Why?
I just couldn't deal with this. The over-exaggerated child acting.
I didn't think she was. I think she played it really kind of natural. Like, because I think she's over-exaggerated in every other film. But in this one, first of all, her accent is not, like, posh in these movies, which she randomly gets so in the other ones. But she just, I feel like she's just, like, playing it, like, without any sort of like self-consciousness.
Yeah.
And I really like responding to that. I thought she was really good in this.
She barely appeared on my radar in this film, to be honest. I felt like she was very inconsequential.
She's I love that you say that.
I do feel though that Ron, or at least the way he's portrayed in this film, is that like he's unaware that Ginny's into Harry. Is that intentional?
Oh,
like
I know
he's not picked up on it.
Do you
at
feel
all.
Like they like explicitly make it a thing that she's into Harry in this movie?
I don't
the
know.
The only bit I can think of is the bit where she runs down the stairs in the beginning. I can't think of any other time where she like.
But his
seemed to be, you know.
During that's what makes me say it actually, because when she runs down, you know, she sees Harry and then she kind of her face freezes because she's like, oh, it's the guy I fancy. And then he immediately cuts to Ron after and he hasn't clocked it whatsoever.
I do know what you mean, but I don't think I'm struggling to think of a line of dialogue that she has between running down the stairs and doing the frozen face like that and Harry finding her in the Chamber of Secrets at the end. Did
yeah.
she say anything else?
She doesn't really. That's why she barely registered with me.
She might not actually. Maybe that's why I thought she played it so natural.
Because she's just not in it.
Yeah, she played it like any good female and just shut the fuck up.
If you're still listening.
Right, so back to Flourish and Blotts, right? There's this weird bit where they're about to... First of all, Anyone notice that all the Weasleys are covered in fucking soot?
Yes.
That entire scene.
I did notice that. What? So you can't travel by flu powder without getting covered in shit?
Which is bollocks, because people travel to work at the ministry every day using the flu network, and they look pristine. So, I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, I thought, are they covered in soot from the flu journey, or is it just general poverty?
It's got to, exactly, though. I reckon it's got to be that they're the only family who can't afford chimney sweeps.
Yeah,
like, because they're just really,
Or maybe they buy, like, discount flu powder that's like 100% pure.
Yeah, that is, some of it sticks to you.
Yeah.
It's not flu powder, it's fool powder. It's like a knockoff brand.
It's not even powder, it's just a brick that they pick up and just put it on the floor. Yeah. So they're about to exit Flourish and Blot, and Malfoy comes down the stairs, opens a book, tears a page out, puts the page in his pocket.
Yeah, I noticed that.
What was that?
Yeah, and I was like, is that going to be something?
Yeah,
is that, and then it's just nothing.
Yeah, and it was such a bizarre... I feel like Tom Felton was like, you know, I really want to do these things. I feel like my character would, like, do this right now. And then Chris was just like, do whatever you want, mate.
He was like, fine.
Yeah, fine, just do it if that's what makes you happy. So he's like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And then that's just what he needed to, like, get into character or whatever, just being, like, generally destructive.
Yeah.
It was just bizarre, though. But he's so fucking over the top in this. Which is, like, they are kids and it's, like, whatever. But I feel like he's not good in any of the films. I really like Tom Felton, the guy.
I suppose.
He does become a better actor much later on in life.
I feel like the character, Draco Malfoy, is such a caricature anyway that I found it less noticeable than, like, Ron, who is normal and reasonable, but he makes these extreme faces and talks like this. It's like, fuck off.
I feel the opposite.
It sounds like he's taking the piss out of how kids act.
I mean, I don't feel that way. Yeah. No, I feel like Draco, I feel like you just had to kind of play Draco as he's written on the page and you would have hit the right note. I feel like he goes in there just thinking, oh, I've got to be mean. And he goes in there just as that as his only, like, thing. And it just doesn't work for me at all.
Yeah.
Because it's like Lucius is equally as much of a cunt as Draco is.
Yeah.
Just with, like, a slightly better vocabulary, really. And Jason Isaacs plays him perfectly, you know?
Yeah, perfectly. He is great.
Yeah, just everything he does is so... Like, when he's, like, talking to, like, Arthur, and he's like, when you see the company that you keep, what's the point of being a disgrace to wizard kind if they don't even pay you for it? Everything's so, like, almost not even moving his mouth. And it's just such, like, his sneer is so perfect and, like, everything. Because he plays it so, like, subdued, but everything comes across so, like, strong with it. I loved it all.
Mm.
Although in the end, I'm going to say this now because I can't keep it to myself any longer, but in the last scene that he's in the office, did any of you notice that he has this, like, Morticia Adams, like, beam of light across his eye?
I didn't know.
Yeah, because I remember in the Adams Family, and every time it cuts to her, she's kind of in shadow with that beam across her eye, and he has the exact same thing. And I'm like, you're standing in a very well-lit office right now. What is going on? I feel like Chris Columbus literally, like, just read, like, directing 101. It was like, how many Dutch angles and fucking beams of light can I put in this?
Oh my god, the fucking Dutch angles
it's
in this
atrocious.
Movie.
It's atrocious.
It just...
He's got no artistic talent. I'm just going to say it.
Someone quickly remind me what a Dutch angle is.
It's when you do that, like, kind of tilted thing like that, usually to show some sort of, like, menace or, like, craziness or whatever.
It's like the camera's tilted on its axis.
If you watch
the parallel
John Travolta did, Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, loads in that.
Almost completely comprised of Dutch angles.
There can be films where it's done really well to make a point, but, like, it's just overdone in this film. It's like 75% of the shots in this film.
Also, I need to talk about the music in this. I think almost all the way through the fucking music, the score itself is great, but is used so inappropriately in almost every scene. It's so fucking over the top. And it's like the score is really explicitly telling you exactly how you should feel in this moment watching the movie.
Well, this,
and
I mean,
like,
to be honest, I didn't notice that. I didn't pick up on the music at all. But I guess what you just said fits with the overall theme of this film just being like ham-fisted in every way.
Yeah, that's it. That is exactly it. Yeah, every aspect. I put that everything is so like overly saccharine. Like everything is just too much. It's just too much all the time. It's like, do you know what? It's like having, they baked a sponge cake, right? They put a fuck ton of fucking frosting and like sprinkles on the top. And it's just a pure sponge filling. There's no like little jammy bit in the middle or anything. There's no like layers to it. Just fucking dense, undercooked sponge in the middle that you don't enjoy.
Yeah.
So you're like, fuck me, I don't eat this fucking cake. Hagrid.
Just let it go, Gifton. Making a cake for someone is a nice thing.
Oh, trivia. So Lucius doesn't have a job, right?
Okay.
Him saying to Arthur, "I'll see you at work," was just put in for the movie. He's not mentioned as having a job at any other point in the books. It's because the Malfoys are, as we knew, they are generationally wealthy. So they just do like rich people shit. They don't work.
Yeah, because it's sort of implied that he works at the ministry. Mm. And then in this film, he says to Arthur, "See you at work."
Yeah.
Like he works in a different department of the ministry. But yeah he doesn't.
So like he pops there all the time to like speak to like influential people and stuff.
So is that just a fuck up in this film then?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, okay. So it's not him saying, "I'm going to come in where you work just to mess with you." Or something like that. That is what he's saying.
Kind of, yeah. Right. I think she was like, yeah, put it in the film because it's sort of, it doesn't really matter. Which it doesn't actually mean, you know, but just because I did look it up, I was like, so does he have a fucking job then? Then I Googled it and he doesn't.
Yeah, that's the thing. I remember him saying see you at work, but I didn't clock at the time.
Well, we got the invisibility booster in the car. It's not working.
Just quickly about that. So how did they know it had worn off? Because we see the car become visible. The car isn't invisible on the inside to them, I imagine, right?
It is described in the book as being invisible. Harry said he looked down, but he couldn't see
that
down.
That is true. Oh, that is true. Okay, I'll go with that then.
All right, good.
Okay, well.
Glad we could address that.
What more about the wizarding children?
That would be fucking terrifying.
It would be terrifying. And Harry nearly falls out in the journey in the film.
Yeah. Oh, does that not happen in the book?
No.
Oh, shit.
No, there's no... The whole them being on the track and then thinking, oh, we must catch up with the train soon, and then turning around and doing the, like, fucking slapstick scream and then, like, having to swerve out the way and then falling out the window. That's all just film bullshit.
That would have... He would have fell to his death.
Yeah.
And Ron would have just gone to school and he would have been the chosen one.
Bloody hell. Oh. Yeah.
I thought the Whomping Willow effects were really good, actually.
Real good.
Yeah, I was really impressed.
Really impressive.
Yeah, they got whomped good.
Yeah. Whomped real good.
There was a shot where they fell from the tree, the car lands back on the ground and then skids right up to the sort of lens of the camera. And it's a shot that starts as entirely CG and ends with a live action, and it's totally seamless and you can't tell where one took over the other. It's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was one of my favourite bits of this film. Which I guess isn't saying that much.
Yeah, the bit that wasn't real. So yeah, I mean, things happen, like you all know. Like they get there, they have sort of a less severe time with the teachers telling them off for flying in on the car.
Yeah,
like,
that all
was a very sort of. She's a lot more like charmy with them, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
not this time, boys. But if it happens again, you'll be out of here.
Yeah.
They go to Herbology.
I love her so much.
Neville faints and she's like, no, just leave him there.
I was like, yes, bro. I love her so much. So they go to Defense Against the Dark Arts and we have the pixie scene.
Yeah, and also I noticed that when they're in Flourish and Blotts, Lockhart doesn't announce that he's the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
Doesn't he?
I don't think so. He just turns up as their...
No, yeah, you're right. I'm pretty sure you're right. He very distinctly says it in the book.
Yeah, he makes a big announcement on
it.
Yeah,
he's like,
I did not notice that.
Yeah, but pretty sure he just forgets it altogether in the movie.
Yeah. No, he did, because he gives Harry his collected works free of charge. And then, smart Harry, this is for the daily profit.
And then he just sort of shoves him away.
And then he just turns up. There's no mention of the fact that he's the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher until he just walks into the classroom. Yeah.
We have just skipped past the howl a bit as well, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Got anything to say about that?
I mean, not really.
I was just thinking it would be quite funny, like, if I was a 13-year-old wizarding child, I wouldn't open that howler in front of all my mates, first of all. And second of all, if it's just got a mouth, I know what else I'm doing with it.
Fuck your mum's mouth.
Is it technically his mum's mouth?
It's her voice. That's close enough for me.
Oh, really?
No, but he, so in the, if you leave the howler, it just explodes and says the thing anyway, right?
Okay, right.
So he wouldn't have had time, because someone says to him, oh, he says, like, I'm going to try it. No, he says that he's not going to open it, and then Neville's like, you need to, because I didn't do that once, and it exploded. So if he didn't, it would have just said it anyway, and he wouldn't have had time, I don't think, to get out of the hall before it was going to go off on one. Yeah. I saw a live screening of this with a live orchestra. They have subtitles on the screen, and there is actual dialogue from the Pixies in what must be the original script. So the Pixies were saying, were basically saying, oh, should we cut this thing down, and oh, go over there. Like, they were, so they're basically saying all the things that they were doing in that scene. And obviously in the film they don't have any dialogue, and I thought that was a bizarre thing to not check when you were sort of like putting the subtitles on this print that you're sending out. But also, why even have it in the film in the first place? I wouldn't have thought you'd have thought to give them words anyway. Do you know what I mean?
And it's certainly not in the book.
No,
is
not
it?
At all.
No,
it was just bizarre. I thought,
I'm trying to remember, because I watched it with subtitles on.
Yeah, I don't think it has it on these ones, which is bizarre.
Yeah,
but that's not the first time that's happened. When I watched another film, I watched Jurassic Park in the same fashion, and the subtitles seemed like original scripted dialogue and not the actual dialogue, because they were like sometimes like whole like phrases that were coming up in the subtitles that weren't being said by the characters. Alas.
The Pixies lift Neville up by his ears.
That's a fucking,
can you imagine?
Oh, I think they would have come off.
Yeah.
Especially the amount of time he's up in the air.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they move on to do their detentions. Harry hears the basilisk, which has the most stupid voice ever in the fucking movie. It's actually quite scary in the books. In the movie, I hated it. That's when I first thought, TV movie production values this has for me.
Yeah.
And then they see the big thing with the cat on the wall, the water on the floor.
Yeah.
The red in my pants. Sorry, on the wall. And fucking, right, so Dumbledore literally comes around the corner and still stands about 4 feet back from everything, and then manages to, like, say, it's like, tell everyone exactly what has happened without inspecting any of it. Like, he looks at Filch and he's like, oh, Argos, she's just been petrified.
Yeah.
He's like, how would you, you've not done any, you just happened upon the scene and you've just looked and then said this.
Exactly.
In the books, he, like, properly, like,
they take him to Lockhart's office and
he
does
her, like,
some prodding about.
Fumble, didn't he?
Gives her a good fumble and a prodding, yeah.
Why is he called Felch, by the way?
What, Felch?
Yeah.
Tom called him Felch at one point.
No, you did. It was from Dan.
Was it?
Yeah, in the first movie episode.
Oh,
we
was
did,
it?
He called him Felch, yeah.
Called him Felch.
Oh, it was, it?
I just like to think that they call him Felch because every time there's a mess, he just, like, quietly grabs a straw and just walks
a
off towards
a funnel.
It's a living.
So yeah, they go to Transfiguration.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And then they, it's quite shit because in the books, the scene where they get told about the Chamber of Secrets is really good. It's my favourite bit of that book.
It's in History of Magic with Professor Binns, which doesn't, who doesn't feature in the films at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that in the, yeah, in the Transfiguration class, yeah, McGonagall mentions to Ron that wand needs replacing.
Yeah.
Yeah, what does he turn the scabbers into exactly?
It's like a rat cup.
Yeah.
It's a cup, is it?
It's, yeah, a cup, but still furry and got a tail.
Okay.
Which makes me feel a bit
I thought
sick.
It was some kind of...
Then someone... He takes a drink from the furry cup.
Hey!
And she says, as part of her explanation of the Chamber of Secrets, the beast that lives there is said to be a monster that only the heir of Slytherin can control, which is kind of spelling out the fucking
heavy-handed exposition.
Exactly. How has no one figured out what it is?
Yeah. So right.
What,
yeah,
what
ergo, it must be a snake.
Yeah, what kind of beasts could only Salazar Slytherin control? Oh,
snakes or gerbils.
Germans?
Snakes or Germans?
Wait, where was Salazar Slytherin in 1939?
What do Munich. We know? He was doing experiments. I'm never going to go there. Oh, God. And doesn't it go to the Quidditch match?
Yeah, they think Malfoy's the heir. Yeah, then it's a Quidditch match.
Right, my big... Sorry, have you got a...
I was just going to say the brooms and their flying looks fake as shit. Their legs just hang down completely still. It looks like they're straddling a pommel horse.
That.
And they're completely still
shit.
As they're flying around. It looks awful.
My well big spotted. Point, right, didn't was who that. The fuck are all the spectators yeah. at the Quidditch match? Literally, this school has maximum like 200 students. There are like at least like 1,000 people watching that fucking match, and most of them were adults. It seemed.
Yeah, like, there do seem to be people? There do seem to be a lot of random adults about later yeah. in the hospital wing when Harry's in there regrowing
yeah!
his arm. When
I noticed that
they bring in Colin Creevy. It's McGonagall and Dumbledore and two fucking randos. Like, who the fuck are they?
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. Maybe Madame Pomfrey's just, you know, like, getting in people from Hogsmeade now.
Yeah.
She goes down there, she gives them a little, like, special sauce. They all fucking get sick. She's like, I'll take care of you. Up at the hospital wing.
Yeah, and then they just become dependent.
She gives them all, like, a lobotomy, so they just can't fight back.
Lockhart comes in to try and fix them and just makes it all worse. They'll just start bleeding through the nose.
Oh, I've accidentally given them all Ebola. And Madame Pomfrey's like, oh, my stars and whiskers.
So yeah, the Quidditch game happens with the rogue bludger. The bludger breaks Oliver Wood's broom. Did you see that?
Yes. Yeah, because and then doesn't it like smash into one of like these like stands as well?
It smashes through like a couple of the stands, and then Malfoy and Harry are having a chase down in the sort of lower structure of the stadium, and it smashes through loads of that. And I swear in loads of the Quidditch matches throughout this film, the stadium gets fucked up.
Yeah. Mm. It gets set on fire at one point as well.
That's in the first one. Oh, no, that Snape gets set on fire.
Yeah.
What? Snape gets set on fire?
Yeah.
Snape does, yeah.
Snape gets set on fire.
Yeah, this Snape gets set on, you know, flambe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make mine banana, please.
Oh, and did you know, have you seen Community, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen Community? Well, then this is just for Dan. Did you know that Lee Jordan is Magnitude, the guy that goes pop, pop?
Really?
Yeah.
No. Right. We'll have to look that up after.
Yeah, it is. Right, and, I looked it up.
How did you spot that?
I didn't. I can't remember. I knew it from ages ago, but I just remembered when I saw him in the film. It's this like, Community is a great sitcom, by the way.
Okay.
But he's this cameo character who like whenever he comes in, like a party starts and his catchphrase is pop, pop.
Okay. I like
and that's like his only line. And it's the guy who plays Lee Jordan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a crack.
Yeah, my spine.
Yeah, in his spine, guys. He didn't just fucking moon me.
Actor's name is Luke Youngblood. What a name.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's American, I think, and he did the English accent for the Harry Potter.
He does that accent really well, actually.
Americans in this film.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah, that's not good, then.
It says he's a British actor here.
Oh, maybe he did. He must have done the American for... I got it the wrong way around. Sorry, guys.
Whoopsie Daisy.
Yeah.
Oh, wouldn't that be an awesome name if you named your kid like Whoopsie first name?
That'd be so cruel.
My name's Whoopsie too.
Jesus Christ.
Right. What other shit happens?
Oh, well, Malfoy says that line training for the ballet Potter as well.
Does he?
Just, yeah. And it just didn't sit right with me. Because
what are you referring to?
Yeah.
Him dancing and swerving around to get out of the way of the bludger.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
First of all, he's clearly never seen ballet.
Yeah. Secondly, boys don't do ballet.
Yeah. There's no words in ballet either. Or bludgers. Or snitches.
Or penises.
I just didn't think it was a very good line.
Yeah, I feel like people never say like the best like zinger line in this universe, really.
No.
Apart, there's the odd, okay, there's twice. One where they're looking at the astrology chart in Trelawney's lesson, and then Parvati is like, something, yeah, so blah, blah, blah. And then the thing is around Uranus, and then Ron's like, can I have a look at Uranus too? And I was like, ah. And then there's a bit where Snape, like, is reprimanding Harry, and then he's like, do you understand? And then Harry's like, yes. And then Snape's like, yes, sir. And then Harry's like, you ain't got to call me sir. And it's like, oh,
does
yeah,
he say
boy,
that?
Yeah.
That's a fucking, that's a great line.
Jesus, that kid's got some balls.
Really?
Man. I would not say that to Snape.
Right. I think it's in book six.
He would just like, I feel like he would just kill me on the spot.
I put that Hermione has such boss movie spells because she does Finite Incantatum on the bludger and it explodes. And it's, yeah. I think it's Finite Incantatum, she says. But she always says, but she doesn't do that in the books. And so she always has really awesome like spells that she does in the films that are not in the books. This is the second time now she's done something that's like cool.
There are a lot of spells in the films that aren't in the books,
yeah.
I think.
That so, often make more sense in the films. Like they're like, yeah, they should use this.
Yeah.
Like the whole like Maxima thing is not a thing in the books.
No, it isn't. She's quite a lot. Nor is Solemn, I don't think.
No, it's not.
No. I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's all just zeros and ones to me.
But speaking of spells in the film, we talked a little bit in the book episode about with the dueling club.
Yes.
We were talking about what spells they actually do in the film versus what they do in the book, and I made a note of them.
Okay.
Malfoy used, so Lockhart says, disarm only. Yeah, that's it. Snape says, it might be prudent to teach them to block unfriendly spells. And Lockhart's like, yes, great idea. They get Harry and Malfoy up, and then Lockhart's like, remember, we're disarming only. It's like, no, you're not. Snape just said, block unfriendly spells. Anyway... Malfoy uses Everte Statum.
What the fuck is that?
I don't know, but it blasts Harry back and he does like three backflips
and
then lands on his ass.
Watching these kids fly about this room is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
It's really
fucking
satisfying.
Do you think they're on strings? Harry then looks up and does Richter Sempra on Malfoy, which does exactly the same thing. Right. Just blasts him backwards. Then Malfoy does Serpensortia.
Right, okay.
And the snake comes out.
Yeah, but so it's the cobra in the movie and it's not in the books.
Yeah.
It's weird that you can control like fake snakes.
Like conjured snakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I suppose they're not really snakes. They're just sort of manifestations.
That's bizarre. Anywho, what happens after that?
So that's the dueling club. Then they're in the library after Harry uses his parcel tongue. They're sort of in a generic library study scene. And Harry just gets loads of weird looks and stuff. He wanders outside and finds Justin and Nearly Headless Nick.
Yeah.
And I haven't got anything more to say about that.
Do you know what I did wonder is how the fuck did they administer the potion to Nearly Headless Nick?
Yeah. That's true.
Like, surely you would have just fucking ended up with a really soggy pillow. Like, you can't pour it into a ghost mouth unless you, like, killed the mandrake, as you would anyway, I guess, but then made, like...
A ghost mandrake.
Yeah, so you made the juice from, like, the mandrake spectre, I guess.
So you have, like, spectral gardening tools as well to cut up.
Maybe they had to, like, shift themselves into, like, a separate dimension.
Would anyone give that much of a shit about Nearly
Headless
Nick? No,
I would just be like, look, he's fucking dead already. Who cares that he's died again?
Yeah.
I think J.K. Rowling would give a shit. It's the level of
John Cleese
pointless detail that she would go into.
And he has tax bills. Yeah, I was just a bit confused by that. It should have just been like a natural recovery. Like he just got over it eventually.
Yeah. If that's it, oh shit, we're at the flashback scene already in the film. Is that the actor that you fancy?
I think he's gorgeous.
I think he's better looking than the guy who plays Riddle in the later films, but I prefer... Acting-wise, I prefer the later guy.
Oh, fuck off. I am sorry. I'm going to do an Oprah and say I will not accept that. Yeah. Like, seriously. The guy in that fucking film looks like he's fucking chewed a fucking wasp and then put a toffee in afterwards and then decided to talk. And I'm not appreciative. Ugh.
Oprah said that?
Oh my god.
Damn, that guy got slammed. Harry stumbles out and finds Justin and Nearly Headless Nick petrified and hears the voice again. when he's out there. And at this point in the film, we've got a voice that only Harry can hear. We know that Harry's a parcel tongue, and that McGonagall says the beast is a beast that only Salazar Slytherin could control. If anyone is still trying to work out what this beast is, they're a fucking idiot.
Yeah,
like, it's in the books, it's really quite, like, I don't think I pieced it together, because they don't spell it out like only the heir of Slytherin could control it.
Yeah, yeah, like, because you have no idea what the...
And also the way Harry speaks parcel tongue sounds a lot like the voices he hears from the wall, and you don't have that auditory cue when you read the books. So, like, yeah. I feel like you'd be forgiven for not working it out. And you're not supposed to have worked it out by this point in the book. But if you haven't figured it out just from watching the film, then they've basically have spelled it out already, which is unfortunate, I think.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, because I wouldn't have necessarily made that leap while reading it. I think I probably would have come to the conclusion around at the same point that Hermione did, because she would have been like, oh, fuck, yeah, because if you're the only one who can hear it, then I would have been like, oh, yeah, it must be like a snake or something then. Whereas you're right, yeah, she does sort of kind of put it on the table.
In the films, yeah.
I think they try and throw you off the scent. I mean, it's a pretty futile effort, but when Filch gets all accusatory during this bit as well, do you know, Harry follows the voice out into the corridor, and then Filch is just like, you killed my cat or something.
Is it? I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
Do you not remember? It's really brief. It's like one line.
No, I've never seen this film.
Harry, it's called Wizard Child 2. Wizard Child. As if it could be any less appealing.
I would just like to point out that Myrtle is played by a 40-year-old woman.
Is she really?
I was wondering how old she was. Is she 40?
I mean, I would assume so, because she was in Bridget Jones. She played Bridget Jones's friend, who was like the one who kept having the breakdowns in the bathroom, if you remember. And she was at least in her late 30s in that movie. She plays it amazingly, yeah, but now
slightly freaked out by Myrtle in this film. She's so weird and so intense. Like, in the book, she's just fucking dramatic. In this, she's like creepy. I was like, it makes me uncomfortable.
That voice. I think she probably got cast purely really off of that. She's quite small and that voice is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And her like wailing is amazing. I kind of do like an impression of it. Should I try?
Yeah, notice how we were just silent. Like, oh, well, that's good.
I'll go and wait for the neighbours to inevitably knock.
But yeah, I was sort of, now looking back at it, I'm like, it's painfully obvious that she's not the same age as these other kids.
Oh, see, I mean, I didn't pick up on it at all. I thought it was a child actress.
Really?
I mean, maybe she got bullied because she was kept behind in school.
Maybe. Fucking hell. So she wasn't just moaning Myrtle because she complained a lot.
Oh, come on, Myrtle. You're going through the menopause and you can't even do 12 times 12.
Look, if you can put this condo on this banana, I'll give you a pass.
That's not a banana.
Shit, it's yellow and it peels. It's fine. Oh, God.
Right, so then there's the Dumbledore's office scene after they find the two petrified people. And Hagrid bursts in with, he never did nothing, Dumbledore. Even though in the book, Hagrid bursts in because Harry encountered Hagrid right before.
Yeah.
And he doesn't in the film, so Hagrid just bursts in out of nowhere.
Yeah, because unless he bumped into McGonagall and she told him, but then Hagrid has no actual basis for saying that Harry wasn't the one who did it.
No.
He's just because he knows him.
Exactly. In the film, it's like, he didn't do it. I know he didn't do it because I was with him. Just
and
like...
also, there's a lot less outrage from Hagrid in the movie. The whole thing just seems really inappropriate.
Yeah.
Like, Dumbledore's like, Hagrid, can you like actually just get out?
Like, yeah, like, that bit didn't need to happen at all. Yeah. It just happens because it happens in the book.
And it's like, why, out of all the things they chose to include, so that, then we sort of, things happen.
Then it's all snowy and Christmassy.
It's Christmas, yeah.
I totally forgot about Christmas.
Yeah, and then Ennis Polyjuice potion time.
So I forgot about that too.
And why, and so they set the trap for Crabbe and Goyle. And they Wingardium Leviosa the cakes and make them float in the air.
Why do they do that?
Why do they do... That just makes it... I mean, Crabbe and Goyle are idiots, fortunately. But what that... if anything's going to make it super obvious that these cakes are a trap of some kind, make them float in the air.
why wouldn't you just stun them both and kind of leave it at that?
Yeah.
And just drag them into the... If need be, just fucking shove the cupcakes into their mouth once they're already stunned.
And then, make them choke on them.
Yeah. Put it in their mouth, put masking tape over the top.
Yeah.
Fucking...
Kill them.
Cut their, cut their faces
them,
off.
Dismember yeah. them.
Wear their faces. I mean, it is a Chris Columbus film,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, reenact...
Reenact Mrs. Cage Doubtfire. But the way they eat these cupcakes, by the way... It's obnoxious.
Yeah, they eat it in the same way that the kids eat the jelly that they discover in Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Which, with the kids, you can understand, they've been for a fucking ordeal. They just can't believe they got food at last.
Oh, God, that's so vivid. Yeah. As soon as you say that, I can picture exactly that horrible scene.
You see Crab, like, shaking his fist. It's like Hagrid coming down the corridor with, like, nipple tassels on. And Hagrid's like, yeah, we phoned out about what you've been doing with Snape. Thought I'd have a go myself.
You can tag team me out.
He fucked us. He fucked us. Oh, God.
Dumbledore. Dumbledore!
Right, so they go to, after all that kind of mess, yeah, they get to Draco and they get into the Slytherin common room.
Yeah, they barely drink any of the potion.
Can I just ask very quickly, hypothetical, what would happen if they drunk like a little bit of each potion?
Oh,
what a question.
Yeah.
If only we could try it. This was a real thing.
God.
Like, what do you think they'd have like a love child of Crabbe and Goyle?
I reckon it would be... I reckon you'd sort of turn into that thing from The Goonies.
Oh, God. Chunk. Is it Chunk? I can't remember.
I think it's something weird like that. I was like, oh, yeah. I'm really not the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine it would turn out well.
No, or maybe you'd just turn into the last one that you drank.
Well, no, but if you mix them both together...
If you mix the potions together... And then drink that.
Maybe they would just cancel each other out.
I feel like it would fuck you up pretty seriously.
Maybe you would just die.
Try and turn you into two people at the same time. Yeah, it's become a weird mutant mix.
I think you've got to fire a tweet off to J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling attention to this podcast, really.
No. I feel for all the publicity it would bring us, I'm scared.
I think it'd be hilarious, to be fair. I mean, our like listenership would go up like to 20,000 overnight easily.
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure. But I'm still scared. they meet up with Malfoy, and Malfoy says to Goyle, which is Harry, "Why are you wearing glasses?"
Oh,
and
yeah,
he's like reading. Then he goes, "I didn't know you could read."
That's another thing that I fucking hated.
Oh, really? I quite enjoyed it.
Oh, Tom! Yeah. Fuck me.
I'm afraid I'm on Gifton's side in this. It fucked me off, really. Yeah,
it was so like... Because you know that he knows what lines are supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
And he delivers them as such. And that's the worst way to approach comedy. And he obviously doesn't know that. And so it lands fucking flat. And I just feel like, how are you not embarrassed?
he might be.
I hope he is. To be fair, I will say this: Tom Felton, because he does acting again now. He was in the Flash and things like that, and he's actually pretty good now. But yeah, kid Tom Felton, fucking clueless. Yeah, I'm not. Ugh, anyway,
yeah, I kind of hated the scene with Harry and Ron as Crabbe and Goyle and Malfoy, just because they're such fucking... They just cannot control themselves. If they have much more self-control in the book. Like, they get the mention of the Weasleys, Ron gets all, like, tense, and then he, like, goes to swing at him when he says... Yeah, that's it. When Malfoy says, Dumbledore's the worst, Harry stands up and he's like, "You're wrong!" It's like, control yourself, you fucking dick.
Yeah, like, it's not that egregious.
No, it's not...
It is weird. I mean, there's so many points at which Harry Potter could be indignant about things and he isn't, and that's a time that he chooses to be.
It'd be different if Malfoy was like, "You know what I could do? I wish I could dig up Harry Potter's mother and fuck her corpse." wouldn't that be great, guys? Then I can understand if he was like,
yeah.
It's right. I have her howler. It's fine. We don't need to. Yeah. It's...
That whole, to be fair, I forwarded that entire scene because it always annoys me.
Yeah. It's
too much Malfoy. She's too much everything.
Annoyed me. I do think, though, that when they get back to Hermione in the bathroom stall, I feel like that could be potentially the birthplace of the furry fandom. Like, there's a very, I don't know, there's something about that that makes me think.
It's a big old pussy, that's for sure.
A following began.
But then, then she gets, first she was afraid, then she was petrified.
Oh God, I think I hate you for making that joke.
But you know, she survives.
Oh, she never could say goodbye. What are we trying to say here, guys?
I'm trying to say that in the next scene, so Hermione's in the hospital wing, petrified. First, she's in the hospital wing. Fucking hell.
Don't say that as if we've created this mess.
I'm so hot.
Should we try opening?
Oh, shall we? I apologize if there's any background noise.
I apologize if you hear our neighbor murdering his girlfriend.
There's a serious heat wave in London at the moment and it's unbearably hot.
Also, I apologize that women are always the victims of my jokes. Yeah. I'll make a conscious effort to turn that around.
All right. They find a fucking puddle of water on the floor and follow it back to Myrtle's bathroom. And she's sitting very calmly up in the window, just having...
I bet she is. She's fucking just relieved all that tension.
Yeah, just having...
like flood.
Yeah.
Oh, my shoes are making that thwack thwack sound on the floor. Oh God, yeah. Sorry, Myrtle is being very pensive on top of the stool.
Yeah, after having apparently just like meticulously and calmly flooded the bathroom by somehow turning on all the taps and blocking all the sinks and the toilets with her immaterial hands.
When a ghost has got to go, they've got to go, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Do you live near an airport?
Gatwick is just that way.
Let's just keep going. Yeah, I apologise for the noise.
Yeah, guys, we're recording at Gatwick Airport. Yeah. We're in the loos. We couldn't do it anywhere else. We just wanted to bring a bit of authenticity to it, you know? In the loo. Tom's just blocked it, you know?
I was thinking, authenticity. They spend so much time at Gatwick Airport in the Harry Potter films.
Can you imagine if that's where it was set? And every book is just Harry trying to get past immigration. Sorry, Tom.
All right.
Yeah, Myrtle turned on taps and she ain't got any hands.
Oh, God. I'm starting to feel like we're just not going to make it. This is it. We're going to die recording this podcast.
I mean, at least you have a great epitaph, right?
Yeah.
So what happens then? They go to the spiders. No, Harry, the fucking diary, right?
Yeah, yeah, he gets sucked into
Harry,
the book.
Harry
yeah.
finds...
The fucking diary.
Where's the fucking diary?
I want to do it good.
Oh, you just got to do the cage like... Huh, huh, fucking...
Fucking diary.
Diary. Fucking finds the fucking book.
Finds the fucking book. Book. Book.
You're nailing it,
this
mate.
Is how you will be remembered.
This is how you do it. This is how you do it. That was fucking terrible.
Oh, we shouldn't do accents.
No accents.
Oh, well, you're all right at them. It's me. It's fucking terrible.
Oh, I don't know. Anyway, Harry finds the diary.
Yes.
Starts to write in it. hello, my name's Harry Potter. Right, we all know the fucking story. And then there's the memory scene. Sorry, I'm losing the will to live.
Do you want to just like take a breather and have some water?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
What, have you not been drinking water this whole time?
No.
Tom, that's very irresponsible.
All right, so where were we?
Harry's in the diary. Tom Riddle's just there being sexy. And then we basically see the story unravel. Tom shows him that Hagrid had this fucking spider demon in his trunk. And that was the monster that was killing everyone.
Yeah, so, yeah, all of that. Sorry.
We're getting so fucking, like, slapped at.
I know.
Yeah.
The thing is, fucking knows. It's basically the book.
Yeah.
Quite sure.
Yeah. So they go down and see Hagrid about it. Cornelius Cudge.
Oh, God, that's disgusting. Oh, God. And then what did he do next? He touched my couch. Can you describe how? No.
Fornelius.
Fornelius couch.
Oh, I'm fucking losing it right now. Okay, get it together.
So if I just gone there to say look.
And in the bit where they take Dumbledore away,
yes,
Dumbledore doesn't say the bit about how I'll only truly be gone once nobody here is loyal to me.
Oh, okay, that's good.
He says, well, it's not, because then the Forks and the Hat arriving makes less sense.
I feel like it makes just about the same amount of sense, to be fair. It's just nice, you know, that the bird-like appears.
Yeah, but it's because Harry shows Dumbledore so much loyalty, and it's established that Dumbledore will be there as long as people are loyal to him.
Doesn't Harry say something about it in the chamber?
Yeah, he does, but...
Enough. I feel like Harry saying it out loud is what triggered Forks to...
Maybe. Well, yeah, but Harry's just pulled that out of the air.
So he's just being ultra nice.
Yeah, but the fact that Dumbledore says it means that it's true, whereas Harry saying it being, like, it doesn't mean anything.
I sort of, for me, it has, like, equal impact either way kind of thing. Because when Dumbledore says it, I think, fuck off. But when Harry just sort of says it, like, out of just being, like, a nice guy, I sort of, like, think, that's kind of cool.
You know? I guess, but Dumbledore says, I will only be gone when none left here are loyal to me.
Yeah.
And then Harry shows him loads of loyalty, and then Forks arrives, and it's like, oh yeah, because Dumbledore said that would happen. Harry says Dumbledore will only be gone when no one here left here are loyal to him. Harry doesn't know that that's a thing. He just says it.
No, but... let me think. I know what you're saying, but I feel like it's something that Harry, I feel like, maybe would just pull out of thin air as like a defiant thing to say.
Yeah, totally. I totally get that. But the point is, when Dumbledore says it, he's saying it about himself, and therefore it's established a rule.
But I think that's... What kind of fucking rule is that?
The one that Harry doesn't get to decide about Dumbledore.
Yeah, but he's not. He's just sort of saying, I went...
Yeah. No, he's not making it as a rule, but the thing still happens. Forks still arrives.
Yeah, because I just thought it was more like Harry was saying, like, as long as Dumbledore's still in my heart, I'll still have his, like, strength kind of thing. That's how I sort of was, like, reading it when he was saying it in this instance.
Yeah. That's all fine. But that doesn't mean that just because Harry says that and feels it doesn't mean that it is actually the case and Dumbledore will still provide help.
Yeah, but I just think that Forks sort of hearing that or whatever... It was just like that sort of thing. I don't feel like it needed... I don't think like it is a rule, you know? I just feel like it...
I just think it makes more sense that Dumbledore says it because it's Dumbledore is the one that's providing the help.
I just feel like it's equal sense because Dumbledore isn't actually there either way.
No, I suppose, but still. He does say... what's the other thing? Help will always be available at Hogwarts for those who ask for it.
Yeah.
Which, again, doesn't make any sense in the film because Harry doesn't ask for help. He just looks down at the sorting hat on the floor and the sword appears in it on the floor.
What, Harry says that?
No, Dumbledore says that in the hut.
Yeah. In the film.
He kind of knowingly looks through the cloak to them.
He says, help will always be available at Hogwarts to those who ask for it. Which is poignant in the book because Harry puts the hat on his head and he says, help me, help me.
Yeah.
In the film, he just looks down at the hat and the sword appears there.
Does Dumbledore address that in the meeting at the end?
I don't think so.
He says something to him about the sword because he's like...
that, yeah.
He, you want to ask me, and he's like, yeah, what, should I have been in Slytherin? Or
in that sense, he says, yeah, only a true Gryffindor could have pulled the sword from the hat, which is tiny, by the way. It's like a dagger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a fucking, that wouldn't do anything to, but that's like a Christmas cracker sword. That
yeah.
A letter opener. Is this, we're talking about the one he stabs through the roof of the mouth of the basilisk?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's the same size later on. It looks like it's much bigger in that scene later on. And when he picks it up, it looks tiny.
It should have been a proper, like, Excalibur-sized sword, not like a little thin, like, stiletto kind of knife sword.
Yeah.
It was a weird design choice for sure.
Mm.
Maybe they just needed something that he can carry with his little wimpy boy arms.
Yeah, probably.
So, yeah, like, basically, Hagrid says the whole thing about go and see the spiders in the forest, right?
Yeah, and there are shitloads of spiders in Hagrid's hut all making their way out of the window.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, right?
So, yeah, they do just that. They go into the forest. They find Aragog's lair, which is the opposite.
Yeah, and I still don't think it makes any sense that Aragog can talk. Giant spiders don't have the vocal shit necessary to talk human language. Surely.
The way this scene's filmed, it almost feels as... It feels like it's suggesting it's projecting its voice, like, telekinetically, rather than...
Telepathically.
Sorry, thank you. Telekinetically. Ow, what's that? That's my voice. Oh, really bloody hurt, Harry. Yeah, because it sort of... It kind of... focuses in on the head of the spider with the eyes.
You're kind of right, actually.
And it kind of suggests that they're hearing the voice in their heads as opposed to it, you know,
actually saying the voice, because it obviously doesn't have the...
That would have been a nice idea. I don't think that is the case, but I think that would have made so much more sense, actually, if that was...
Yeah, because it's clearly a magical creature, so it could have some magical properties like telepathy.
And there was a nice amount of reverb on that voice that it could have been, like, spooky mind talking. But I mean, he's a fucking giant spider, so there must be some magic stuff about it in general, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Fine. I'll let it lie. They leave the cloak in Hagrid's hut again. Well, I say it again, as they do in the book, and that just makes me want to tear my fucking hair out.
Yeah. I did like I liked their escape from the forest more in the film than in the book.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I like that they actually tried to get the car flying to get out of the forest.
Because I think a lot of people would have been... screaming at the screen, like, fly, the car can fly. And so they do acknowledge that. Harry says, like, get us in the air or something.
I feel like both of them should have been a lot more scared at every point in that.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, if anything, Ron's pretty scared, but it is.
Even when the fucking spider comes through the window, he's not scared enough, I feel.
Yeah.
He screams, but in a way that you would if, like, a strange man grabbed you, not your worst fear.
Yeah, but even when they're approaching Aragog's lair and the spiders are, like, all around and Ron's like, oh, Harry, can we turn back yet? Harry's just like, no, shut up, and is just, like, going forward. And I mean, Jesus Christ.
He legit should have pissed himself.
Yeah.
I want to see that, like, wet patch on his trousers, you know, growing as he gets more and more scared. And then he just turns around and it's just a shocking amount of brown as well. And then he's just sick too. Just like a triple threat. Oh God, that whole scene really terrified me, because I was picturing myself as them, like, trying to get out of that situation, and it was fucking horrible. But they did get out of it, and Ron's like, I swear to God, I'm gonna kill Hagrid or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, well, yeah, someone fucking needs to. Then what happens after that? Oh, they go back to the hospital wing, right?
Yeah, they find the note.
The note in Hermione's hand.
Which, by the way, is a fucking huge bit of paper in the movie. And I'm like, how did anyone miss this?
Yeah.
She's basically holding, like, an A4 notepad. And Harry does that weird, like, creepy, like, touch of her dead hand and then, like, finds it. And it takes him, like, 20 minutes to, like, fucking unfold it all. And I'm like, in the book, it's like a tiny bit of paper that she's pulled out of a book. Just, like, scrumpled really tight. So it was easy there, because Harry was like, he wondered how he missed it before, but everyone did. In this, no one would have missed that.
You know?
Everyone would have fucking found that bit of paper. Maybe they did, and I was like, I don't know what that means, just put it back. Or Dumbledore was like, oh, I can't have them solve the mystery that quick.
Oh, yeah. So you think that it wasn't there, and then he put it back when they were off in the forest?
Yeah. Put that back.
Things. Oh, God. Oh, she's a cat now.
Oh, and she can't move, you say. Okay. She has no idea what we're doing. Okay.
Oh, God. Well, this just got interesting.
Yes, the possibilities are endless.
Help will always be available at Hogwarts to those who ask. She can't speak, you say?
I think that's the darkest thing anyone said on this podcast so far.
That's amazing. I love it.
Oh, fucking hell. That made my stomach turn. Oh, Jesus. Oops. Christ. They find the paper. It says really explicitly what the basilisk is.
Yep.
They find the pipes bit. It's in huge fucking writing and he doesn't seem to see it until the exact right moment. That kind of pissed me off a bit.
Mm. Yeah. And I thought, like, we know Dumbledore was around 50 years ago when the chamber was last opened. He's in the flashback. So Dumbledore, at the very least, must know that it was Myrtle who got killed, because the identity of the girl that got killed would have been well known.
Oh my God, yeah. Mm.
And he must also know that the ghost is still there.
Why wouldn't you fucking go and ask her straight away?
Yeah, and also know that the beast is something only Salazar Slytherin can control.
Do you know what? Maybe he did do all of this, but he was like, I don't know how to get it.
Yeah.
So maybe that is what he was trying to figure out, is how do we fucking find it? And that was always like the question for him.
Yeah,
and it couldn't have been, because he was fucking, when Colin Creevy, he was like, not who, but how.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that he must have been, if he can't put the pieces together from the information that he clearly has, he's a fucking idiot. Or he knows exactly what's happening and just doesn't tell anyone and lets it all unplay, well, I mean, you know, fold out.
I mean, of course, if I was him, I wouldn't tell anyone, because he's got all those fucking petrified students at his disposal. Like,
so if you were him, you'd enjoy yourself, would you?
Just dim those candles. Pull like the medicinal curtain around
us. Oh, God. Oh, my God. Awful.
You look so pretty with makeup on.
Just giving them all makeovers. He's got them all sat in like salon chairs with their head things down.
Now grasp your mandrake roots and
do you
pull
want
them
to
up.
Fuck me. Tell me you want to fuck me.
I'd fuck me.
Hermione, would you put the lotion in the basket?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Right. So all the shit happens.
All the shit happens. And Myrtle says, I'm seeing a pair of big yellow eyes by that sink, which is the sink Harry looks at to open the chamber. And then when the chamber opens in the film, the entire sink blocks moves out symmetrically, uniformly, and all moves out the way, revealing a big pipe underneath the entire block of all the sinks. Mm. Meaning that, why would the eyes have been by that sink? Because the pipe is just in the floor under the entire sink block.
Yeah.
But if it came out of there...
Yeah, but all the it doesn't come out through the sink with the snake engraving on it. All the sinks move away at exactly the same distance.
Oh, does she point to that precise one?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, she says a pair of big yellow eyes by that sink over there, which
is
the one...
Well, maybe it was by that sink when she saw it.
Well, mate, that's just a coincidence then.
Because maybe it'd come out and then... If she would have heard the thing, maybe it'd come out and then it all sort of reformed as she was coming out. So it might have just been there.
Maybe, but the point is, there's no... The entrance isn't at that sink in particular. The engraving of the snake is, but the entrance is underneath the entire block of sinks that all move out in exactly the same distance away. So it wouldn't have come out by that sink. It might have. It had like a 1 in 8 chance or whatever.
No, but she didn't say it come out by that sink. She said she saw it by that sink.
Yeah, so it might have just been there. But if it just happened to be next to the one with...
So it's reared up. It might have just happened to rear up.
Again, hand gestures.
I think rear up in tones what I meant, right?
It could have. It had a 1 in 8 or 1 in 10 chance of being by that sink, whatever the number of sinks there are. Yeah, that's fucking bullshit.
I mean, that's this book, right?
Yeah.
It was originally a glory hole, but she changed it.
Harry leans down and peers through. Ow, my eye.
This is why they call me Moaning Myrtle.
Oh, God. So him, Ron, Lockhart, if you haven't mentioned.
Oh, yeah, Lockhart. Yeah, there's the whole announcement. Like, it happens like it happens in the book.
Yeah, apart from McGonagall doesn't say, oh, well, that gets him out of the way then. They sort of
She does it with a sort of shitty and sarcastic tone and say, well, you're more than up to the task, aren't you? You should be a trifle
like
for you.
I feel like it could have been sort of put forward more than...
Yeah, it could have been clearer that she was just trying to get him out of the way, because it is quite a funny thing that she just does it to get him out of the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they all go down there, literally, it all kind of plays out exactly as it is in the book until they get into the chamber. The door to the chamber, I believe that's from what I remember from the tour, so that's a real like mechanical...
I really did like that, actually. Yeah. The snake that goes all around the outside and the other ones pull in, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got the Lockhart fail where he nicks Ron's wand.
Yeah.
And then Ron knocks him out with a rock.
Does he?
Yeah. He's like, what? Lockhart's on the floor, like, and he's like, Lockhart's memory charm backfired. He hasn't got a clue who he is. And Lockhart's like, strange sort of place this, isn't it? Do you live here? And he picks up a rock and is sort of throwing it. Ron just takes the rock out of his hand and just goes bash. It's around the head and just knocks him out.
Completely fucking
like, Ron, that's so unnecessary.
He could have fucking killed him.
Yeah.
To be fair, that would be the best place to do it, right?
Yeah.
Look, he just got killed by the bass.
He got killed by the falling rocks. Look, the rock wound on his head.
Yeah, in fact, Lockhart didn't even come down here. Who's Lockhart?
Yeah.
Harry's eating the evidence.
Which bit to start with first?
I got really bored at this bit, by the way.
Oh, like, this is where I perked up.
I just felt like this whole scene could... It could be a bit shorter. And then I came up with an idea for a film because I was bored where Harry and Ron are drug peddlers a la Narcos.
Yeah.
And I thought that would be more fun than this scene.
I'd hate to watch that.
Would Harry be Pablo?
Yeah, I think Harry would be Pablo and Ron would be his like secondhand man.
Yeah, I mean, that's a few different people throughout.
That's true, because that, like, he kills a lot of them,
Lemon guy by the end is like the only one left.
That's all right. I'm all right with Ron dying.
Yeah. <That's>... Yeah. Something that really pissed me off in this, when Harry runs up to Ginny, I was thinking, because it's a classic film thing, he's going to throw his wand on the floor. As he runs up to Ginny on the floor, he's going to like cast his wand aside, because that's what they always fucking do. They're armed with something and they see someone's body on the floor and they go, run up to it. And as they run up to it, they throw their weapon away, and he fucking does.
Oh.
He goes up there and it's like, as he's kneeling on the floor next to him, you hear the wand like clatter to the floor as he just casts it aside and puts his hands on Ginny and is like, Ginny, no. So then obviously fucking Tom Riddle steps up and just picks it up off the floor.
That's a pain.
You just wouldn't do that. It's only in fucking films.
Also, I hate the way that he asked for his wand as well.
Give me my wand, Tom.
Yeah, it was like, that was...
I heard that. I literally wrote that line out in my notes because it pissed me off so much.
Yeah, like, you just wouldn't do it. You would... Just the whole inflection was just wrong.
Yeah. There's no need to do the pause between wand, Tom.
Yeah.
Like that.
It's like, too, like...
You're not that posh, Harry. Give me my wand, Tom.
Yeah, be like, give me my wand, Tom.
Yeah,
be like,
that's my wand, you prick.
Yeah, wand, give me, Tom. Tom, wand, give me. Me, wand, give, Tom.
I am a wonder wanting, Tom.
Tom's like, I think he's trying to communicate.
Yeah, and then Tom's just like, no. And then Harry's like, how are you here? And then he's like, I'm a memory come to life, whatever, blah, blah.
Yeah, the whole basilisk scene. I mean...
I thought it was great, to be honest. Yeah. I thought it was really good. Much more exciting than in the books. It goes on a little bit longer as well.
Yeah. For me, it's one of those things where it's difficult to compare because they're such different mediums. Like,
no, you jest. Okay.
Well, you slow down. Going a mile a minute.
Okay, first of all, fuck you both. Does mean the way an action sequence is written is necessarily very different to the way it is in a film?
I feel like, though, there wasn't any... It's not like how you can't write a car chase, really, you know?
No, you can, but you focus on different details.
No, but I feel like she could have... The things that happen... I feel like she could have written them and they would have been equally as, I can't definitely say equally as exciting, but I reckon they would have been exciting still to her to describe him hiding around, like, around the corner with like bated breath and then climbing on the statue and stuff. It still, I think it still would have been, I feel like she could have written that and it would have been fine. It would have been, because it's over very quickly in the book, it feels.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like for me, that belongs in a film, doesn't belong in a book for me. I think it's just unnecessary extra guff that doesn't add anything to the story, but it does add to the film because you can build tension that way.
I mean, I guess so. I don't know. I would have enjoyed it if it was in the book. I
remember. Fair enough. You do you, mate.
Wow. So Harry slays it.
Yeah, the basilisk says, oh, I've been defeated.
And it's a pretty good death. Like, stabs it right through the roof of the mouth.
And I liked how he got like kind of like speared, I guess, with the fang. I think the design of the basilisk is really good as well.
Yeah, it's cool.
The CGI was good.
Which is more than I can say for the design of the phoenix.
That's terrible.
Which looks hilarious.
That fucking crying bit was shocking.
It's clearly just like this big model bird. It just looks like a fucking shrunken down sort of orange peacock.
Yeah. They should have just CGI'd it.
Yeah.
I feel like if it was made later, they would have.
I feel like 2003 CGI or whatever, whenever it was made, would maybe not have been up to the task.
Probably not.
Maybe not, actually, because it is quite close. It's quite like a static image of it on camera, so maybe it wouldn't have held up.
And that there were quite a few points in this film, as there is with a lot of like early-ish CGI stuff, where you're like, okay, we're briefly in a cartoon now, and we're back to reality, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the bird would have been that if they tried to CGI it, but I mean, it looks shit anyway.
Do,
so
like, isn't when they fly out, isn't it CGI?
Probably.
And it's like at that speed and that sort of distance, it looks fine. Like, but I reckon at that it would have. It would have been a very quick shot of it. But yeah, Ginny wakes up and she's like, it was me, Harry, but I didn't know what I was doing, blah, blah, blah. And Harry's like, sorry, I get that too.
The voices make me do things.
Yeah. You should have seen what I did to you.
Yeah. Before you woke up.
Speaking of which, I should check on Hermione.
Speaking of which, maybe get Forks to crown you too.
Oh, God. You ever had a phoenix cry between your legs?
I was going to make the most awful... Oh, why did that even come into my mind? Just, I imagine his healing tears. Like, please cut this. I'm literally like healing the gash up. Yeah.
Oh, God. Just sealing her up like a Barbie. Oh. Has that wound nice and healed? Won't be bothering you anymore.
That's okay, Ginny. I like a challenge.
Yeah.
This will be my goblet of fire. Right, so everyone makes it out.
Yeah, they go back to the scene in Dumbledore's office, and I thought...
Hold on, first of all, they fucking fly out through a random cave, like, opening that opens out into the ground somewhere. They don't go back up through the thing. Yeah, they fly up and up, and then out into, like, the moonlight through, like, a cavern. I'm like, so where was this fucking entrance then?
Yeah.
Really, I thought that was a bizarre, like, thing.
I didn't notice that. Yeah. That's annoying.
They end up in Dumbledore's office again.
And go ahead.
Just rewinding briefly, can someone explain to me how him stabbing the book actually works? Like,
oh, right. So the book actually contained a part of Voldemort's soul, right? So the only thing that can kill... So that's called a Horcrux, when you put your soul into an object. The only thing that can kill... that can destroy a Horcrux is something that can damage it beyond repair. So there are very few things like that, but a basilisk fang, because the venom in that is like fatal, that him stabbing it with the basilisk fang damaged it beyond repair, so it destroyed the book. If he stabbed it with anything else, it wouldn't have worked.
Right. Fair enough. What else is strong like a basilisk fang?
Fiend fire, which is like magic fire. Not just any magic fire, it's a particular magic fire that they do one of the think Crabbe or Goyle cast it in the final book and it kills one of them.
Yeah, and they destroy them using the sword of Gryffindor as well. And I think the theory behind it is that it's been infused with basilisk venom from Harry's exploits in this
goblin made or can only imbibe that, which makes it stronger.
That's it.
So it repels dust and things like that.
Wait, goblin... goblin what?
Goblin made metal.
Sorry, because you like dropped your tea like with your London accent. I heard goblin milk.
I just make a wheel out of fucking a lady goblin strapped to like a wheelbarrow. It's just like, right, it's all right. What you're doing will save many.
Yeah,
fucking like. Harry just sucks it and spits. Ron, it's not working. Suck harder, Harry. Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah, so the Sword of Gryffindor, when he stabbed the basilisk with it, it took on some of the venom that was in the basilisk.
Right.
So from that point on, it can be used to destroy Horcruxes, and they use it in later books.
Right.
Yeah.
So they all end up in Dumbledore's office.
Yeah.
And I have a question. Which is a question I also have because it also applies to the book as well. Why does Lucius Malfoy bring Dobby to this? Because he's going to confront Dumbledore about having reappeared after having been dismissed by the Governor's Board. Mm. And he just randomly brings his house elf with him.
That's a good question. Mm. Yeah.
And it's so that story-wise, it's so that Harry can nicely complete the arc of Dobby being a slave who needs to be freed. But why? Why does he bring Dobby? It would have made sense
if like Dobby was carrying like a load of like shopping bags or something that obviously he didn't want to carry. So he was like, it was him, and he's like, big mistake, huge. That's a Pretty Woman joke.
Okay.
Someone will laugh at that, don't worry.
I'm sure they will.
Sorry, I'm really proud of that one.
Okay.
No shit.
Okay, right. So, I don't know. Yeah, it makes no sense. He shouldn't be there.
Yeah, he just randomly brings... at no other point does he bring any kind of servant with him. It's just so that Harry can do the thing, the bit where he frees him.
So, exchange happens between Lucius and Dumbledore.
Yeah. Then there's the whole bit with Harry, chasing Malfoy... down, and
which works much better in the film,
because he puts the sock inside the book and then hands the book, and then he hands the book to Dobby, whereas in the book he puts the diary inside a sock and then Malfoy sort of unwraps it and throws the sock away and Dobby just happens to catch it, which is a bit like and then
where does he get the sock from?
He takes off his foot, which is another annoying thing. He pulls up his thing as if to show him where it came from.
Oh, yeah. The viewers couldn't put that together.
Well, I think if they hadn't shown that, because...
Imagine Harry going, Dobby, open it. And he does it just like a used condom in the middle.
I was going to say, if you don't show him taking off the sock, you're going to assume that a 13-year-old wizarding boy is giving him a crusty sock.
Yeah.
Him just holding it up and he's like perfectly vertical.
Just,
fucking Lucius. And this is definitely a post-film, book 4 film. Fucking Lucius tries to Avada Kedavra Harry.
Does he?
Yeah.
He goes, Avada. And then Dobby goes, you must not harm Harry.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Exactly. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Because you wouldn't kill a fucking student on school grounds. It wouldn't happen.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I did not pick up on that.
Yeah. So book 4 had come out just before this. So it would have been taken from that. That's when we first hear about the
tries to fucking kill him.
Yeah. Because he doesn't do it in the book. He just points his wand.
Yeah.
That's it.
Fuck me.
Yeah. And then Dobby's like, oh, how can I ever repay you? And then Harry's like, just promise me something. And then Dobby's like, anything. And he's like, never save my life again. I'll never try to save my life again. And Dobby's like, But I thought Dobby literally does save your life again in book 7.
Yeah, I know. I wrote that. Like, he promises never to try and save his life again. He lies because he does.
And then they go for dinner. not him and Dobby.
Yeah. Yeah, the end of the year feast, and Dumbledore does the all exams are cancelled bullshit.
And I like that Hermione was like, oh no. Hilarious.
No, I think so.
Friggin' hilarious. Actually,
yeah, I think it's owned, and then I think it's in brackets. I think I remember reading it.
Oh, okay. That's all good. And if I, ugh. Hagrid appears.
The ending with Hagrid.
Sorry about that. Wee Peter has got lost. Some Errol fucking.
Yeah, some ruddy bird named Errol.
And Ron does his classic, like, muffin munching face.
Why would he know that? Why would Hagrid.
He wouldn't at
all. It's just a fuck it. Oh.
Yeah.
I hate everything about this ending, to be honest.
Yeah, and then they all, like, Harry fucking gets up and looks up at him, and then the music swells, and Harry, like. And then, like, gives him a hug, and then
there'd be no Hogwarts without you, Hagrid.
Oh, I was like, fuck off. And then and the music makes it so much worse as well, and it's just everything about it is so fucking like 1993. Do you know what I mean? It's just no one would be that happy.
No, it's like, do you mean like it's all, it, the saccharine?
Yeah, it's just so like fucking put this in a fucking bow.
Yeah.
Like, they might as well just told him that his parents are not really dead.
Yeah.
And that he hasn't got to ever go back to the Dursleys again. It's like that sort of like level of like sweetness to it. It was horrible.
Yeah, it was. It's awful. Awful ending to an awful film.
Yeah. And then it just zooms out. That's it. And I thought that fucking castle is massive for how many people are there.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, there's, yeah, like, what a. And half of those classrooms must be completely unused all the time.
Although apparently it's got to, you know, house some percentage of the wizarding population because a lot of them are turning up to the Quidditch games.
Yeah.
I can only think they invite people from Hogsmeade to come and watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have to be it because otherwise there's a lot of, like, useless people, I guess, in this castle.
Yeah.
Just, or maybe when you do, like, Wizard University, there's, like, an extra, like, bit of the school that does that or something.
Yeah, or maybe people just pay for, like, lodgings as part of, like, funding.
Yeah. But I wouldn't want to live around a bunch of kids.
No, but they must have their own separate, like, wing.
Yeah, maybe, like, a bridge separates them. I'd be okay with that.
I'm surprised they'd let any of them in, considering the stuff that happens in this film and book, though. Because they almost evacuate the school, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost.
But they don't. I take it back, actually. Like, there's so much stuff done with reckless abandon in these books that, like, with no, like, decent precautionary measures put in place at all.
Yeah.
Actually, it wouldn't surprise me. It's
just the way that Dumbledore likes it.
Yeah, and then the film finishes and it's Heart's Lonely Lesson by David Bowie.
Is it?
No. Oh, that's the end of Seven, sorry. Yeah.
I wish we were watching that. Fucking hell. What's in the bag? Oh, any excuse to see dead Gwyneth Paltrow, right? Right, so that brings us to the end of this episode.
Yeah, what would you give this film out of 10?
Like 3.
Less than the first one.
No, probably the same.
I'm rating this way lower than the first one.
I think I would as well. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we watched... We watched the first one together on double speed while talking shit over it, and I watched the second one alone on full speed and had to do it in two sittings, so it's different watching experiences, but I definitely enjoyed this one even less. It pissed me off a lot more.
Things like any other time I've watched both of them, I've always enjoyed the second one more.
But
I dislike them both a lot. I just can't wait to do the third one because it's actually a fucking great film.
It is.
Yeah. It's everything about that film is fucking dynamite.
Really well made.
Apart from this, I'll get to it when we do it.
God, let's wrap this up now. God.
I'm saying, like, I'm going to say, 3. Because it would have been a 2, but I think Kenneth Branagh really kind of brings it back up a little bit for me.
It's a 3 ones out of 10.
3 ones out of 10.
3 ones. I might be a little more generous than that. I mean, I might say 4, but that's still a pretty poor review.
Somewhere around
that sort of mark. We were not impressed. We were not amused.
I'm so glad that Chris Columbus had that car accident after this. So, like, would you like to direct the third one? And he was like, I can't. I've got scissors for hands now. And I'm like, oh.
That's okay. Make this film called Pixels instead. I hear Kevin James is attached.
Right, anyway, guys, we need to fuck off now. So thank you for listening. Find us on everywhere. Rate us on iTunes, guys. I can't ask you enough. Please do it. Give us a good rating. 5 stars only, please. Find us on Instagram at PolyRedPod. Find us on Twitter at PolyRedPod. Email us at polyred@gmail.com. And yeah, I've been Gifton.
I've been Tom.
I've been Dan.
And Hagrid's been Hagrid. Goodbye.